Dr. Peter Vincent Pry now joins us. He's the former chairman or chief of staff of the EMP Congressional Commission. Now he runs the EMP Task Force, and he is the author of numerous books. Again, I challenge you to go to Amazon.com and take a look by typing in Dr. Peter Vincent Pry. All the books he's written, he is kind of the lone voice in the wilderness, folks, warning about what I'm afraid is eventually going to be inevitable, and that is a massive attack on our critical infrastructure, the power grid, and an EMP. It doesn't have to be this way, but again, much of Washington likes to play catch-up, and when you take down the whole power grid, there's not going to be a whole lot of catch-up if they take down the entire grid, all three of them. Dr. Peter Pry, again, is one of the lone voices crying in the wilderness, warning us what China and Russia have been preparing for years. Now we're seeing in the last 2 weeks what China is really up to. Dr. Peter Pry, welcome back to the broadcast. Thank you for joining us.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Brian.
Last week, I want to just do a quick review. Last week, we did a show with you about China launching a missile, a rocket. And on there, they had something that circled the globe. What was it that they had that circled the globe? What was that technology before we get into the breaking news of another launch by them? What was that last week we were warning people about?
Well, they launched a space launch vehicle, you know, not a military missile. And that's part of the what a fractional orbital bombardment system is, you know, so that we won't think it's a threat, but a peaceful space mission. And when they are used in this way and launching on a southern trajectory to orbit a satellite over the South Pole, we can't see it coming when it approaches us from the south because we don't have ballistic missile early warning radars or missile interceptors facing south, blind and defenseless from that direction. And so what the Chinese did back in August, which has recently broken into the news and been admitted by the Defense Department, you know, is they combined a what's called a fractional orbital bombardment system, this space launch vehicle that flies on this trajectory, with a hypersonic glide vehicle, you know, basically a hypersonic warhead, so that, and nobody has ever combined those two technologies before, you know, so this is a revolutionary new space weapon. It could do a lot of things. One of the things it would be best suited for is what the fractional orbital bombardment system was originally invented for, is to deliver a surprise EMP attack on the United States. You know, we wouldn't see it coming for the reasons I explained earlier, but it could be an even more effective attack using hypersonic glide vehicles, because the glide vehicles can detach, you know, when they're over the United States and then cruise down to the lower altitudes, say about 60 kilometers. The fractional orbital bombardment system would be up around 300 to 500 kilometers high. And an EMP at that altitude would be catastrophic to the United States, but it would be even more effective militarily to have the glide vehicles detach and then cruise down. Say if you had 12 of them, you know, you could cover most of the most important strategic targets in North America, you know, the bomber bases, the ICBM wings, the two ballistic missile submarine ports, Washington, D.C., NORAD headquarters, Tinker Air Force Base, you know, the critical command control nodes, and you'd be putting a peak field over each of those. And it's a way of winning a nuclear war without actually launching a traditional nuclear attack, just by launching an EMP attack with a single missile, winning a nuclear war with a single blow. So that's an enormous and revolutionary development.
And so last week, when China launched that, it how many times did it orbit the Earth?
I don't know how many times it did, but it orbited at least once, you know, before the hypersonic glide vehicle detached. And a lot of the mainstream press that is reporting, and maybe this is because the intelligence community reported it this way, I don't know why, but they're saying, oh, it missed its target by about 24 miles. And that it had but that's assuming that it had a terrestrial target on the surface of the Earth. You know, a 24-mile miss in the EMP world is not a miss. You know, the EMP field, the peak field, you know, is hundreds of miles in diameter. And so that's a bullseye. And that's another indicator, by the way, that it may well have been testing an EMP attack, because in the EMP world, that's a bullseye. So One of the things that alarms me most, though, is the reaction in Washington. Washington is divided over the significance of this and of other cutting-edge military technologies that are being deployed by Russia and China. You know, things like the hypersonic warheads. We just talked about the FOBs, hypersonic combination. Russia's building the Poseidon, you know, which is a nuclear-powered, artificially intelligent torpedo that would carry a 100-megaton warhead, you know, nuclear-powered cruise missiles, super-heavy ICBMs like the Satan II, you know, that can carry, you know, up to 40 warheads. Every time one of these things gets developed, and this was true last week in response to the revelations about China's August test, about half of Washington yawns and says, oh, this is no big deal. This is not a game changer. There's nothing to worry about here. This isn't going to upset the strategic balance. In fact, I was reading just today, some idiot for the Carnegie Foundation for International Peace said, you know, that the Chinese launch of this space superweapon was not a Sputnik moment. Okay, by him meaning this is not a game changer, this is not a revolutionary development. My God, for anybody to say that, I remember Sputnik, even though I was only 3 years old. I remember standing in my grandmother's yard at night, surrounded by my cousins and parents, and we saw Sputnik pass overhead.
Wow.
And, you know, Sputnik was only about a meter in diameter, and it weighed very little. It was just a tiny satellite. But our people in Washington back in those days, both Democrats and Republicans, were smart enough to realize that that little satellite was a military revolution and it was a game changer. You know, and even the ordinary people standing up, staring up at the sky, we knew the USSR was our enemy. I mean, I was not politically sophisticated at three, but I could see the worry in my parents' faces by the adults, you know, kind of talking about this thing, because this was the first time a satellite had been launched and we didn't do it. It was our enemies that did it. And everybody knew, or at least in Washington, they knew that behind that little satellite was going to be ICBMs that could deliver nuclear warheads to the American homeland. And so we launched a crash program to prepare, because we knew we would lose the Cold War if we let the Soviet Union defeat us in the struggle for advancement in technology and science. That's why we have all these American universities today. The original impetus was a response to Sputnik, an all-hands-on-deck response to Sputnik, so that we would not lose the scientific arms race. And it's a good thing we did. You know, 5 years later, when I was 8 years old, there was the Cuban Missile Crisis. And fortunately, because the Eisenhower and Kennedy administrations, you know, launched crash programs to develop ICBMs, we had a 5-to-1 superiority in ICBMs over the Soviet Union. And that's why we won the Cuban Missile Crisis. Now, what China just demonstrated is far more significant than Sputnik was. I mean, it's a bona fide revolutionary space weapon, you know, and you can imagine a lot of other things that this could do that would shift the balance of power. You know, it could be used for not only EMP, but you could use hypersonic glide vehicles, you know, to attack aircraft carrier groups and sink whole navies. You know, they're traveling at supersonic speeds. You wouldn't even need a nuclear weapon or a conventional weapon on them. You know, they could crash into a ship and sink it, or they could be used to deliver intelligent submunitions, you know, to take out tank armies or to take out air bases across a whole theater of operations. And they can go anywhere in the world in 45 minutes or less. Wow. Imagine that. Wow. If you're fighting a war someplace in the Pacific or in Europe or in Asia, and your side is losing, you know, all you have to do is push a button, and in 45 minutes or less, this super weapon is going to come to the rescue. You know, imagine intelligent air-to-air missiles, okay? Suppose that China is losing an air battle with American carriers over Taiwan. You could launch a bunch of these things and shift the balance by delivering, you know, 100 air-to-air missiles to take out U.S. aircraft. I mean, that's the future that this signifies. Wow. This is more than a Sputnik moment. But half of Washington doesn't think so.
So bring me to what just now, that was last week's revelation.
Yes.
Now we're finding out that the Washington Times is reporting China launches suspected, maybe you showed that headline, Logan, China launches suspected anti-satellite weapon into space. This is the article on the Washington Times website that just came out. China has launched a new satellite that analysts say can be used as a weapon capable of grabbing and crushing American satellites. Dr. Pry, before you got on here, twice I said, you know, is it any wonder that President Trump gave us Space Force and everyone wanted to mock him? Yeah, they can mock him. He knew what was coming, didn't he?
Well, yes, he did know what was coming, but unfortunately, he let the Defense Department bureaucracy cripple his Space Force. Mm. So it's not becoming what he, I believe, envisioned for it.
Right.
I think what President Trump had in mind for the Space Force was to revive President Reagan's vision of a strategic defense initiative, you know, which was mocked by the liberal press as Star Wars, okay?
Right.
But this, Reagan hated nuclear weapons. He hated the idea of mutual assured destruction. He thought it was uncivilized and inconsistent with the Judeo-Christian values, and it is, that your method of preserving the peace is to threaten the destruction of the adversary's population. He wanted a system that was more consistent with our values and that would be a safer way of maintaining the peace, because so-called mutual assured destruction, where the forces are on a hair trigger, creates a circumstance where he who strikes first wins. Whoever gets to be faster on the draw wins, especially if you've got space superior technology on your side. You know, but the idea of the Strategic Defense Initiative was to transition from a condition where offensive first strike strategies would be supplanted and replaced with defensive strategies where you're not destroying the adversary's population, but you're destroying his incoming missiles. You know, you're destroying the nuclear weapons that would threaten to kill our military forces or kill our population. And an arms race in space-based defenses would be a good stabilizing thing, because the stronger the defenses got, the safer everybody would be, and the less incentive there would be to strike first and try to win a nuclear war. And that's why China and Russia are so much against the United States ever deploying effective space-based defenses. And unfortunately, our own State Department, tries to appease them by going along with that. You know, the Biden administration is in Geneva now having conversations with the Russians over future arms control agreements, even though they're breaking all the arms control agreements now, probably including New START, although the State Department doesn't want to admit that yet. We want to sign up with new arms control agreements with them and make additional concessions to them. And one of the things they're going to probably ask for is a guarantee that the United States will not deploy any space-based missile defenses. They want that so that they can preserve their first strike capabilities, their nuclear war winning capabilities, and Washington is stupid enough to go along with that.
And now China launches something that, I mean, it sounds like something out of a science fiction movie, launched a new satellite that analysts say can be used as a weapon capable of grabbing and crushing American satellites.
Yeah, I know. I'm not that excited about that particular technology. I almost wonder if it's meant as a shiny distraction from their real threat to our satellites. Okay. The Chinese are advertising it as a method of cleaning up space debris in space, and that is true. It can be used for that, but it's also true, and I think that it is probably likely, you know, that they are using that technology as a way of being able to maneuver close to our satellites. You know, so that we get used to the idea of a maneuvering Chinese satellite that might come close to our satellite. You know, we are so incautious, we'll fall asleep to that threat. And then they could go and take out an American satellite with this robot arm and crush the satellite. I could see that being useful in limited scenarios. You know, for example, if there was a conflict over Taiwan and they wanted to take out a particular satellite, you know, that was supporting U.S. military forces, because America's military power, you know, is all based largely on our satellite command, control, communications, and intelligence capabilities. If we lose those, you know, we lose what military advantage we have, and it's a shrinking military advantage over our adversaries. So you could take out that one satellite, but they have better ways of taking out our satellites, including the system we were talking about last time. You know, another thing you can do with a fractional orbital bombardment system, you know, we were talking about the EMP attack. A bonus from an EMP attack is it will sweep satellites from space. You know, any satellite, you know, within line of sight of the detonation, and that would include like almost half the hemisphere, you know, above the Earth, would be exposed to X-rays and gamma rays, and the satellites would be destroyed. You know, that's a much more effective way of doing it.
Because if they take out our satellites, our nuclear triad, I mean, that becomes a problem, because those submarines and things, planes need communications, correct?
Yeah. We become blind and defenseless and unable to pass emergency action messages to our forces. If you're doing it with a robot, though, I mean, if you're going to try to fight World War III with a robot, that's an awful slow way to do it. You know, you have to go up to each satellite and crush one satellite at a time. That would be a dead giveaway. I could see that system as being useful in a scenario like I had described, where you're fighting a theater conflict or a limited conflict over Taiwan, for example. But if you're talking about World War III and you want to get rid of all of America's satellites, not just a select satellite, one satellite, you know, an EMP attack makes a lot more sense. Not only do you get the benefit of all the damage you do to command and control and forces on the ground, but as I said, the gamma rays and X-rays going into space will sweep the skies of satellites, and you can, and the adversary can protect his satellites by timing the attack so that his satellites are over the horizon, so they're not exposed to the X-rays and the gamma rays. Or since it's his weapon, you know, he can just harden his satellites appropriately so they could survive in that environment. Wow. While ours would not. So I wonder if these rather high profile robot armed satellites are almost deliberately intended to keep the Department of Defense and Washington journalists focused on the little threat, you know. And it is fascinating to us, this idea of a robot arm on a satellite and all that. I mean, it sounds right. Like it's something out of a comic book.
It does.
I almost wonder if they do that on purpose so that we don't think about the bigger threat.
The bigger threat. Wow.
Yeah.
Dr. Pry, I want folks to go to Amazon.com, type in Dr. Peter Vincent Pry. He's got lots of books, Blackout Wars, The Power and the Light, warning about the threat from China and Russia, North Korea and Iran, who have been practicing, folks, for taking down our power grid here in America with an EMP. It's no secret. This is on their mind, in their plans. He has it all documented in his books. Please go to Amazon.com, type in Dr. Peter Vincent Pry, order his books, read them, spread them around to friends and family and your elected officials, and look at maybe even convincing some of your state legislators to harden the power grid in your state. Vital work, very important that we talk about this and bring this to the attention of our leaders, many of them who are doing nothing, but we the people must bring this to their attention and demand a response. Dr. Peter Vincent Pry is what you should type in to Amazon. Dr. Pry, as always, thank you for being with us, but particularly tonight as you take time away from your family, because I know you guys are all together having a family evening. So thank you, Dr. Pry.
And thank you for the recommendation that people reach out to their governors and state legislatures and not wait for Washington to harden their grid. I just came back from Utah over the weekend, where that state, people in that state are going to introduce legislation to try to protect the Utah grid and not wait for Washington. They could break the logjam and lead the way for the rest of the nation. You know, Washington isn't doing a very good job on leadership these days, so it's time for the people to take control of the wheel wherever they can, and starting with the states is a good start.
Absolutely. Thank you, Dr. Pry.
Thank you. Thank you, Brandon.
Dr. Peter Vincent Pry checking in tonight. Again, I hope you'll order up his book, support what he's doing, and at the same time, you're going to get a great education. It's a win-win for everybody. Dr. Peter Vincent Pry is what you should type in to Amazon.com. His latest book, The Power and the Light.